Welcome this evening. For those of you that are new here this evening, welcome to the Art Club meeting. My name is John Erie. I'm one of the, I guess, loosely coupled moderators for this ragtag group here. I just wanted to make a quick announcement, and that would be to advisory to shut off their cell phones, just to put them on buzz so that it doesn't interrupt anything. And wanted to welcome everybody and let you know that this is a great opportunity to hear about some great things from Google and about the FLPC project and about the upload in general. I'll turn it over to Rick Smith, who actually will do all the formal introduction. Well, actually, do the cool stuff.
Well, not too formal, but I guess I'm kind of like the ghost of Buckwell's past. Because I started the group 1 month shy of 10 years ago, and our first meeting was at Coffee Underground, and one of the persons showed up. And the reason they showed up was because their wife was on vacation and they had nothing better to do. And it's been uphill since then. And we've had a lot of different meeting places, and we've had mixed turnouts, but we're almost 10 years old and we still have a lot of good stuff going on. We've had kind of a rejuvenation, I guess, over the last few months. David Nally coordinated a lot of good presentations and got things going again. And we've got a bunch of stuff lined up in the next few months. One thing that I just heard about is Dylan Lust from Time Warner will be doing a presentation in the next couple of months. We have, I can't remember what the other one was. There's two others.
Iculus?
Iculus?
Iculus, yeah. Whatever that is. That's
the name. You mean Dean Cordy, probably.
Dean Cordy. Things like that. But so the funny thing is, I have my name tag down here as Almost Fearless Leader. And part of that was because I was terrified to get up in front of the group. But I did it anyway, because I love Linux. And I wanted to share the Linux operating system that I found out about that I thought was so neat. And so here we are, we're still doing it. And we've got a lot of people who are actively doing things in the community. One of them is the FLPC, Kevin, that's Free Linux PC. They're getting out to the community and hooking up companies that have old equipment that they're trying to find a home for with people who need a PC, and they're getting Linux on it, and people are getting to use computers and getting to learn about all the good stuff about Linux. And we thank our current hosts, Frank for the medium, we'll have him come up and say some things about the medium. But enough of talk for me. You know, Kevin, you want to come up and just give a couple minutes on...
Can you go first? Because I got my mouth full.
Okay.
I'm honored.
I'll take about 10, 15 seconds.
No, so you've got 10, 15 seconds.
Logistics, if any of you need to use the restroom, down all the way down the hallway through the door to your left. Welcome to Medion. We've been here since October, and we're really excited and proud to be associated with the U Club group and the Free Linux PC program. This is a base point to distribute PCs since before Christmas. And we're excited to be able to make use of this space. This is kind of an expansion space that we have for award and other meeting purposes. So welcome to Medion. We'll be doing, if any of you guys don't take a tour of our data center after this presentation, we'll be kind of queuing up right out here. We'll take you and show you our data center. So you ready now, Kevin?
No, yeah.
All right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, it's time to get up here.
Hello, everybody. We started the Free Linux PC program, just some guys from the Upload back in 2007. Basically, the idea is that we take computer donations from local businesses. We organize an event. We bring the computers in and set them up on a table. Medion has been kind enough to sponsor the events last three or four. But then we put them on a table. Families come in. Usually they have one or two kids sometimes. They put the computers together, then they install the software, we go through some basics about Linux, about the program, the idea, and try and get them to get on the internet. We don't push them to do that or anything. We just basically, some of them have internet, some of them don't, but we'd like to eventually get them to be able to get on the internet and, you know, and learn and that kind of thing. Really, it's more for, we're hoping to get the children, using a computer more, because the families that don't have a computer. There's a lot of ideas you can do with a Felix PC. I've got a presentation back here if you want to look at that and give you some ideas. If you know anybody's getting ready computers, please let us know. If you go to freelancepc.org, we just started that, and you can read the materials. You can send an email to freelancepc@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to tell you more about it or set up some trying to get some donations and that kind of thing. So that's probably about it, but I've got a table over here to give you more information. So
thanks.
And now for our main presentation. I don't know if anybody can talk, but I sit down for a year. I generally, at some point, go to Google. So I'm excited to hear about Google. We have Ken Ware from Google, and there he is, and it's all yours.
Hi.
I'm Ken. I work for Google. Who can guess why I'm here in South Carolina?
We have cheap electricity.
Lots of free land.
Right, so
was,
no, not exactly that.
Smart people.
Exactly. So press release went out a while ago. Google is building a data center near Charleston, it's in Berkeley County, which is what, 3 or 4 hours from here, roughly?
3.5.
So that's why Google is here talking. I'm talking also kind of for personal reasons. I came from a town very, very comparable to this one, about the same size. I had a Linux users group. It was a similar town from the perspective of it's not a town extremely known for its IT background. There wasn't, about Silicon Valley, that sort of thing. It was a town that had a long history of textiles and industry and that sort of thing. And one thing that was very interesting about that town, especially having that Linux user group there, was there are tons of people that are interested in Linux and not only work for small businesses that use it, but people are very interested in it as a hobby. And so there's a thing on Slashdot about their loves are dead or something. Apparently they're not. There's a lot of you folks here, which is pretty cool. So whenever I get the opportunity to go and talk on behalf of Google, especially to a Linux users group, I take it. I'm not a professional speaker, as you're about to painfully bear witness to, but I do enjoy talking to these sorts of folks. And really, I'd like to save a whole lot of time for Q&A, because in my experience, that's the best part of this whole thing. But one thing I did want to touch on in particular is my own experience going from Mozilla, where I was sort of recruited from, and then working for Google, why I went to Google. So I was a Linux system administrator in a town about the same size, as a few hundred thousand people. And I was really, really happy. I worked for a very small geek shop. It was 5 or 6 geeks. And who's a Linux system administrator here? Anyone? Do you do anything besides Linux system administration?
Yes, but that's changing it. Basically, I keep hammering my bosses to change software over. A few months ago, I migrated us from Exchange to Zebra. Mm-hmm. So I'm hammering away at what's left that's not Linux.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you do network administration?
Yes.
Do you do security stuff at all?
Yes.
Okay, you do it all, right? You look at new products and merge them into the business, that sort of thing. That's what I did too, and I really liked it. I liked wearing 4 different hats. I liked being a Linux guy. I liked being kind of the most experienced guy there, which was, was not saying a lot. It was easy. There's like 6 guys there, so it's kind of nice. And I really didn't want to go work for a big company. If Yahoo or some Microsoft, especially, come calling and told them to go to Pound Sand. And then the opportunity to maybe go work for Google came along. It actually caught my interest. And it was probably the only big company that really could have caught my interest in that way. And a big part of that is having been a very active member of our Linux users group
And it's very cool to hear about the Free Linux PC thing. We did a number of projects like that as well. I suspect that y'all are doing it much better than we were, in a more organized fashion, but it's nice to be a part of a community-oriented group that is also a technology-oriented group. It's sort of an interesting dynamic that we have with Linux and open source culture in general. And to me, Google as a company did a lot to further that. So I wanted to touch on some of the things that I find interesting about Google as a company. I have a high-tech presentation here. Feel free to stop me and ask about any of this stuff. This is not a structured talk whatsoever. Just some examples I just wanted to run through of things that Google does as a company that really sort of further this mindset of being community-oriented, especially from a technology perspective. Most of you are probably familiar with a number of APIs that Google's released for services. Who's actually used one? Cool. Sometimes I ask that question. So they've released open APIs for interacting with a lot of Google services, like Google Calendar and YouTube, or recently this Open Social thing. Chart servers are cool. The Picasa Web, all these things where you can directly, you know, create these mashup sort of sites or just sort of programmatically poke at different Google services, which is kind of a testament to Google's presence as far as being an open company. A lot of companies will open up and provide APIs for different things, but it seems like Google really goes out of their way to attach an API to just about everything that they can. And to me, that's really a smart way to run the company because they kind of get it. So when you open up your services like this, all these people, like people sitting in this room, have an opportunity to go, you know, fiddle with it and do something cooler than it was meant to be done originally, and it kind of brings exposure to the service itself. And probably the best thing is people hammer these APIs and they find problems and they send it back to the company and then the engineers fix it, and it's kind of, you know, the whole open source software dynamic all over again. One thing that's really cool is Summer of Code. Who's heard of that? This is a really cool program. It's essentially Google is paying college students to work on open source projects. And so it's usually, you know, I think it runs over the summer, and hundreds of organizations basically set up issue trackers, the things that they want fixed, open source organizations, like Apache, Python Software Foundation, and like 100 others. I looked at the list today, it's just staggering. So they have kind of a little repository where you can go in and pick a bug. It's not always fixing software, sometimes it's right documentation. The one laptop per child thing is on there, and I think a lot of that is sort of you know, writing documentation and that sort of thing for those projects. But as a student, you can go in and claim some of these open issues, and you get paid a stipend, and you work with an engineer who sort of helps mentor you to do these things. And they pay $4,500, which is kind of a cool thing, especially for college kids. They're doing something else targeted at high school students. I forget what it's called. Anybody remember what the company had? It's almost the same exact thing, but it's for high school students, but it's relatively new this year. Sponsoring organizations of that are Python, Apache, OpenOffice, One Laptop Per Child, OLPC, Git, Gentoo, you name it. And you can imagine why there's so many people or organizations participating, because here's, they have all these open bugs that are just sitting stale forever, and now they have this opportunity for Google to actually pay people to go fix their bugs. It's kind of a cool thing that Google makes available. And, you know, where that's not enough, Google just kind of lays out cash for a lot of these organizations. You know, they donate millions of dollars across Apache, Python, Samba, Jabber, in the form of grants, which is kind of a cool thing. Probably.
How do bugs get cashed into that money?
Send me resumes. One of the cooler things, in my opinion, is a lot of the projects that are developed completely internally to Google later become open source projects. And this happens fairly quickly by industry standards. So some cool thing will be developed entirely by Google engineers, and it's deemed useful by our kind of open source SAR. And then this will go through this process of getting open source in a very quick fashion. The one that's probably, there's the MySQL tools that were released, and this, it's been a while now. It was over, I think, a year ago. But that struck me as a really cool thing. They released a bunch of these tools for administering MySQL. And I think at the same time, they released a ton of patches for the database itself, which is kind of a cool thing. Gennady, has anyone heard of Gennady? You're the first one. So that got released, and I thought it was going to be really huge, and it sort of came out under the radar. But who's heard of Xen virtualization? A lot of people have. So Google developed this kind of in-house Xen cluster management system called Gennady. And it was also open source and released. It's a really cool product, and we use it for a number of things.
I want to ask you what he thinks of it. You might not get it.
Does it suck?
No, it doesn't suck, but it scales to a level that is unnecessary.
Yeah.
It's intended for a much larger, essentially farm boxes. That's past my need. Although other people that have used for it, I hear very good people.
Now, I don't work directly with it myself, but there are people that I work directly with who do. So they seem to like it a whole lot. That's always interesting to me to hear that nobody's heard it. Anyway, that was another example of something that they've developed in-house and released open source.
Can I ask you a quick question on this?
Yeah, sure.
I'm particularly interested in Xen and go off work and personalization stuff now, but how much is Google using, like, you know, I'm guessing Xen because it's mostly open source, and, you know, how much is Google using virtualization internally, you know, and probably using mostly Xen, or what do they kind of go with?
Yeah, I mean, so this is where this is the frustrating part about working at Google. I mean, Google is slightly less secretive than the NSA.
Right.
I
hope so.
Does it feel like a question? Is it a yes or no kind of thing?
I could say that, you know, Xen is used, and Gennady in particular is used for a whole lot of things. I can also tell you that Xen is not something that scales really to the whole of Google production infrastructure, which is vast.
Right.
How many servers do
you have? Yeah, right. I definitely can't answer that one.
If you look at Gennady and what it's used, you can kind of infer the scale that they're using on, even if it's just running that single instance.
Yeah.
I mean, we're probably talking that it's four levels, hundreds of machines, whereas it's
And I don't deal much with virtualization myself on a regular basis, but
What do you do internally to catch that?
Sort of fits generally into what I was going to talk about. I'll get to that in just a second. But I do want to come back to kind of some of the tools that are used in production that I can't talk about because there's been papers written on them and stuff. Other examples of open source stuff that was developed internally is MacFuse, which is kind of a smaller one. Google Web Toolkit was one, and we were just talking about that a lot. For people who haven't used it, who's actually used Google Web, or at least heard of it? You write your web application in Java, and it's compiled into a sort of Ajax-y JavaScript full-blown site. So you don't have to really worry about JavaScript subtleties and going across different browsers and doing all that stuff yourself. So you write it once in Java, and you kind of gets merged into this full-fledged JavaScript Ajax app. It's a really cool thing. That's actually developed by a team of engineers in Atlanta, and I've met them. They're all really cool. And the big one is the Android SDK, and so that's been in the news a whole lot, and it's not what people thought it was initially, but it's a very cool thing. So it's a top-to-bottom open-source stack for developing mobile applications, and I think the big surprise when it was finally sort of unveiled was that Google wasn't making a G phone, they were making open-source software to run any number of G phones, which struck me as kind of a much smarter way to do it. And this really speaks back to what I was talking about, is Google being a very community-oriented sort of open source advocate. And that's a great example right there. You know, why make yet another phone when you could make a software stack where anybody can make a phone, but it's open? And that's something a lot of us have wanted for a long time. So I'm glad they did it. Okay, so in addition to these things, we have a lot of Google staff engineers that continue to work on open source projects. So we hire a lot of, you know, sort of the geek rock star folks, like Rita Van Rossum of Python fame, and Jeremy Allison of Samba. And one cool thing is usually they'll hire these guys and they say, well, so you can do Google stuff, but you know, for you know, half your time or whatever, you'll continue to support Python. You know, you can sit there and work on Python 3000 and with the majority of your time. So we hire a lot of these guys for their wisdom and their expertise, and they work on a lot of Google projects, but they continue to support these great kind of open source entities, whether it's an application or a programming language or whatever. Other examples of that are MySQL, GNOME, Subversion, Wine, all of these open source projects that receive either direct daily development by some Google engineers or have received extensive patches that were sent by Google engineers, which to me is a very cool thing. So this is one of my favorite things about, sort of on the same token, working at Google as a geek, I love Linux, I love technology, and I have a number of these guys that I just consider, and girls, that I consider as my geek heroes. So Rita Van Rossum is one of them. Brilliant guy, I love Python. My team is almost dedicated to Python programming. And Guido's a very cool guy. So if I have a particularly challenging Python question, I can ask Guido Van Rossum and get it straight from the horse's mouth, which that never ceases to get old. That never gets old. So that's pretty cool, you know. And if that's not enough, now we have Ken Thompson. And so, you know, if I have a really great Unix question, which I probably wouldn't take it to Thompson, but if I wanted to, I could take it to the guy who thought of, you know, Unix, which is kind of intimidating. another example, back to the Android thing a little bit, Andy Rubin. He's not quite as famous as those guys, but he was one of the principals at Danger. Who's had a sidekick or at least seen one? That was Danger Incorporated. They did it with T-Mobile and released that phone. And Andy left Danger and came to Google, and was kind of where Android came from. So they use a lot of Andy Rubin's experience from that to kind of develop Android as a software stack, which is cool. So you have Ken Thompson, Unix, Vint Cerf. Who knows who Vint Cerf is? I had the considerable pleasure to have lunch with Vint Cerf. So he came to visit, and he wanted to talk to the local Linux sysadmins and software developers. And so I got to sit in a room with about a dozen guys and just kind of talk to Vint Cerf, and which I knew a week beforehand that he was coming. And I'm so excited, and you know, I'm telling my mom. You know, she's like, "Who's Vint Cerf?" You know? Don't know anything. Yeah. We also have Chris DeBona, which you know is probably less famous than all those guys, but Chris is, he's a former Slashdot editor even, but he's sort of famous for being famous about open source. And
is he ever going back to Floss Weekly for podcasts?
I don't know. But now he is tasked with being our open source advocate. So he is the guy that really streamlines his process for releasing internal applications. And He is also kind of compliance czar to make sure that everything that we use in third party, that we're maintaining, GPL and licensing, and he also very much encourages us to reuse open source software in addition to contributing to it. And so he's got pretty much the dream job for Linux geeks. So that's all kind of the cool community stuff Google does from a technical perspective, but there's also a lot of cool things that Google does as far as Google.org. And Google.org is this philanthropic? Close? They do charity stuff. So they have all these, they're not necessarily techie related, but some of the things they've done is, this is a cool one, I think. They will give away AdWords campaigns to nonprofits. So if you have a nonprofit organization and you need to get awareness or advertising, you can apply for this grant, and you usually get it, and you will get free AdWords. If you don't know what that is, you can, when people search for certain keywords in Google, and it comes up with sponsored links, which, you know, most of y'all probably ignore. But, you know, 1% of the people don't, so that's, or whatever it is. Even though, I don't know if it's like hundreds of a percent, but that translates into a lot of people actually looking at their ads. So these nonprofit organizations get essentially free advertising, and that struck me as kind of a cool thing. There's been, I wrote down some numbers before I came here. 3,300 nonprofit organizations across 16 countries have benefited from that, totaling essentially $204 million worth of advertising, which is a pretty cool thing. In addition to that, Google just kind of gives a lot of grant money through Google.org. If you look at the mission on Google.org, I believe there's something along the lines of they want to give 1% of their revenue to these nonprofit things. And a lot of it is kind of renewable energy, and some of it is encouraging small and medium business in developing countries and that sort of thing. So it's all around kind of a good thing. But, okay, so more about kind of Google production infrastructure and what I do specifically. So Google first started designing its own servers in-house roughly about 1999. And demand was so great for services that it was almost a necessity, because no one was really making them exactly like we were doing it, and we kind of approached things totally from a different end than most people. We decided we're going to use commodity servers, and we're just going to build smart software that worked around failures, and that's kind of what enabled Google as a production infrastructure to be so cheap, yet so powerful, and it was kind of a cool thing. Well, we've continued to do that. Power and cooling is a big concern, so we spent a lot of time thinking about that sort of thing. The production infrastructure is almost entirely Linux, I can't think of anywhere where it's not Linux. And my group in particular, so I work in hardware operations. Specifically, my team, which is a subset of hardware operations, is it's called Hardware Systems. And that's what I was hired for, that's what I was hired to do for Google. I was hired as a senior Linux system administrator. And one thing I like to point out with this team that's a little kooky is we're all Linux system administrators, but the scale we work at is so large, a lot of us end up doing almost full-time software development work. So when you think about what Linux system admins do, you have this fable of the system admin who walks in a new job and then spends 5 minutes writing a script to do his job, and then he displays, you know, Xtank or whatever for the rest of the day. So it's sort of the same principle, but you have to think of how large Google's production infrastructure is, and you know, globally, and it's a lot of blinky lights, and so there's that much more stuff to automate. So I have the extreme pleasure of being a part of that group that is in charge of automating a lot of the Linux system tasks at a scale that is just awesome. I love it. It's a cool kind of hybrid team. So a lot of us end up writing software, so in some ways we end up looking more like software engineers, but we still have to have this experience with being system administrators and knowing how to administer certain services and how to do monitoring and triage and just sort of all these things that really make up the bread and butter of being a system administrator. And we have to kind of marry that with extreme automation and knowing how to write, you know, lots of code. One thing I like to point out is that, you know, for new hires, we don't always just hire people that are great at writing Python code. Sometimes we'll hire somebody that's, you know, written a lot of Perl, but it's just a great system administrator, traditional system administrator. Sometimes we'll hire someone who, you know, is kind of weak sauce on the system inside, but it's just a great coder. And we try and get a good, well-rounded group here. That is just my group. So my group is part of a larger department called Hardware Operations. And it's, put it simply, we're responsible for Google's production infrastructure, which is a quite honorable and vast charge. As you can probably guess, Google has a lot of machines, and they're everywhere. And this new data center going up in Charleston is yet another example of where we're expanding to. One thing I really like about this department is it's sort of the bare metal of Google. So we are, in essence, the common denominator for everything. So every software engineer, whether you're writing Gmail or whatever, your service runs on machines that we own. So it's kind of a cool position to be in, not from a power perspective, but a perspective. We get to see into everything. We get to learn a lot how everything works, really, from top to bottom, bottom up, really. We get to work with a lot of different teams in Google. So on a daily basis, Google is one of the biggest customers of video conferencing. I talk to engineers all over the world, in addition to other people in hardware operations. I get to understand how things are working or where they're not working and help resolve issues like that. So this sort of goes back to my initial point of when I was working for that small company, and I really liked being that guy who wore five different hats, and I didn't want to leave that. That's one of the reasons that I wanted to go to Google, because I knew that I could continue to wear different hats and learn and have my fingers in all sorts of different technical areas. And I have to say that I've been able to continue doing it. I didn't want to end up as just a cog in the big machine. That was my fear going to a big company. And I'm happy to say it hasn't been finished. So on a personal level, I worked as a senior Linux system administrator for about a year and a half, and then I recently defected to the dark side of management. I'm happy to say that it's not quite as office space as I was afraid it would be. So I'm able to remain a very technical manager. In fact, my guys keep me honest. If I have to know everything they know and a little bit more, or else they'll just not listen to me and just kind of laugh at me. So it's a pretty cool job. Yes. So specifically the facility in Berkeley County. So I have to walk a fine line with what I can say and what I can't say. It's a whole slightly less secretive than the NSA thing. But so it's in Berkeley County, which is just outside of Charleston, is my understanding. They're testing the facility in Q1 of 2008, which is right now. Fully operational is targeted at the later half of this year, Q3 and Q4. Some of the services that I'll be running out of the data center are web search, Gmail, YouTube, finance, calendar, iGoogle, Maps, books, and probably a lot of other stuff. We tend to have a good smattering of different services running out of the facility. So it's a good opportunity to really get involved with a lot of my devices, which is my very favorite thing in the world. The sorts of people that we're looking to hire. So I talked in depth about my particular group, and so I'm sort of selfishly motivated coming in because I would like to find about 5 or 6 great system administrators coming to work in Charleston. But there are also a lot of other job openings available. Data center tech, technicians. This is not your typical kind of just rack and stack data center tech job. This is these guys are very, they have a lot of opportunity to work in a lot of different areas and get a lot of great experience. And a lot of times those guys will end up in my group as the system administrators and or programmers. Facilities technicians, people working on cooling, administrative openings, all things like that. And I have a whole bunch of these obnoxious bright colored cards in the back that have to address to find the jobs on, which is the best place to start looking for something. But I'm also here to answer questions. So what questions do you have for me?
Let's start with the obvious one. What's your distro of choice?
Another one I can't say. Are you asking about me personally?
Personally.
So I was a Slackware zealot before I came to Google.
I hear you.
And I still play with it just for old time's sake, but I don't have the opportunity to mess with it much anymore these days. I guess I indirectly said that we don't use Slackware. So I got to get in big trouble. Why did you tell them that?
Does Google have its own Linux distribution in-house?
Sort of. Doesn't everybody? To some extent. All right.
Ubuntu.
I mean, things happen. La 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 la.
What crazy person came up with Google TISP? It was one of the April Fool's jokes.
That's the, refresh my memory.
I think it stands for Toilet Internet Service.
Yes. Yeah, you flush the cable out of the toilet and then Google picks it up on the bottom end.
And the DNA scanner thingies.
Yeah. I like the G paper one. I thought that was really cool. Well, they just shift you your whole Gmail inbox. I don't know. To answer your question, somebody with too much free time ever not about problem.
I think it was the gentleman who does all the artwork for the.
Was it?
Yes, the Google icon. He creates all those fancy ones for all the special.
The holiday ones.
The holiday ones. They got one there.
Yep.
I think that was his idea. Yeah,
it was not you folks. I got way too much free time.
Is there any artwork of the world?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Are there going to be 2 days there in South Carolina? Goose Creek and something else.
I heard Ross Hill, but I wasn't a little too sure about that. Ross Hill.
Again, no problem.
To my knowledge, I know there was speculation going around or something, and something about land purchase, but I'm not sure. To my knowledge, the one in Berkeley County is the one.
We got another one going up in Lenoir, North Carolina.
Lenoir is announced and is public. Yes. They're following a similar timeline to South Carolina as well. So as you can see, I'm very invested in talking to people and trying to find some more people to come work for Google.
So what can you say about the one in Goose Creek? I mean, anything more specific than what you've already said that you can say?
Well, so
it's South Carolina.
It's in South Carolina. It's very near Charleston. It will have lots of computers in it. Think back to details that were publicly available. It's roughly 200 jobs, I believe. Some ungodly sum of money that they spent for it that was also released. I can't talk generalities about, you know, what it's like to work in a data center for Google. Which one thing I like to talk about is that I thought was interesting starting there is it's nothing like you would expect. So I've worked in a lot of jobs, IT jobs, and I really went in there with a certain idea of what it was going to look like. And one thing that I can say is Google just sort of throws conventional wisdom out the window and sits down and comes up with what is really the best solution with the problem at hand. And it's kind of an interesting dynamic because the problem at hand for Google is a problem that no one else has really solved. And this sort of goes back to the original decision to use these commodity PCs and write this great software stack on top of it. So we had this production things like MapReduce and Bigtable. If you go to, this is a really cool thing, and I found this before I started, and this is something I read through before I was interviewed so I could actually talk smart about Google. If you go to labs.google.com/papers, there's something like 50 or 100 different research publications. And so, I mean, I make fun of how secretive Google is, but on the other side of that coin, they've released a ton of research publications about Google production infrastructure. There's even one on the data centers themselves and power and cooling written by the director, VP of my department. But there's also a paper written on MapReduce. MapReduce is this kind of very distributed system for performing very simple operations. You know, Bigtable is very large. It's just a great big table. it's a database of sorts. It lives on top of GFS, which is the Google file system, which you can also read all about from that list of papers. And Wikipedia sorts a whole lot of this stuff and really distilled it down. There's something on Wikipedia called, I think, the Google platform, which really tries to infer a lot of things from a lot of these papers. And, you know, maybe they're right, maybe they're not. But there's a ton of these publications that you can go read and get a lot of really specific details that, I mean, more than I can even remember. But, you know, all the fun stuff I can't answer, you know, what distribution you guys use, I can't say. Yeah, it's just a little
frustrating. Can you talk at all about how you guys do monitoring, or are you going to open source any of that? I imagine everything is developed internally, you know, open source any of that.
I hope so.
But none of it is open source.
Not yet. I don't know that it will be, but it might be. I mean, looking at our past, I wouldn't be surprised if another one of these sorts of papers comes out about, you know, if they're going to write a paper on MapReduce, something that was, you know, very proprietary, then I don't imagine it would be too far of a stretch for them to release papers on those sorts of things as well.
Is there a difference between the two data centers in terms of size?
between South Carolina and North Carolina?
Yeah, or are they essentially mirrors of each other?
The latter,
I believe.
And I'm guessing, because I don't exactly know. But I'm trying to judge by... Pardon me?
Roughly how many employees are you looking for?
I think South Carolina, it was pegged at around 200. And so the press release said around 200, they're trying to definitely, you know, hire local talent and that sort of thing too. And I know that y'all aren't exactly local to Berkeley County, but, you know, I would love to find some Linux system administrators from Linux and come up.
Where is it you're out of?
Yeah.
Atlanta.
Atlanta.
And where did you, what town did you grow up in that you lived so long?
Columbus, Georgia. It was, I spent a few years in the Army and I ended up, which is, you know, Columbus is right next to Fort Benning, and then I got out of the Army and I just sort of, you know, stuck in Columbus and finally got back into IT after a very long struggle. And then there I was. Headset.
I don't know.
A little bit of both.
How about telecommuting? Is it possible to live here and hold one other job then?
Probably not for these sorts of jobs. Well, conceivably it's possible, but for the bulk of what they're hiring for, it requires a lot of hands-on. A lot of these 200 jobs will be guys that are actually deploying equipment and doing hands-on sorts of things. My guys have the potential to work remotely, but I also like to have them there so they can support the needs of the data center. So one of the reasons my group in particular is so widely distributed is because we found a lot of value in having kind of an embedded team in there too. Our customers are all internal, so we don't have any kind of, you know, desktop support or anything like that. Our customers are the data center technicians themselves and people who use the tools we create to kind of administer things. So I like to have those guys bring us
there. So you were saying that you're with the hardware, hardware and operations?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so not just rack inspect, but also the administration of the systems. Installations, configurations, monitoring, you're saying? Anything else along with that?
Network deployments.
Right. So do you use tools to remotely manage your devices?
Yes.
Very good.
Wherever possible, yes.
Do you think I tell us which one?
No.
I'm not asking.
You guys are asking me all stuff that I can't answer. I feel horrible.
It's tailnet.
Yes.
RSH. I'm a senior at USC Upstate. I recognize a couple other seniors from USC Upstate here. The plurality of CS graduates from USC Upstate are hired by the QS1 at Spartanburg. They do ATM software and Visual Basic and COBOL, and that's not happening, at least for me.
Yes.
So would Google just ignore me since I am still in the process of getting a undergraduate degree, or would it still be worthwhile to send them my resume?
It would definitely be worthwhile to send a resume. So there's this little clause in the job rec that says bachelor's degree or equivalent experience. And I don't tell anyone, but I've used that myself. I was one of those. I never finished my computer science degree. I've got, you know, about 2 years here and there spread across four different colleges. And I was one of the ones that was lucky enough to begin working right in the field before I could finish my degree. And next thing I knew, I was working 80 hours a week, and then I didn't have time to study calculus. So, I say lucky because, great, I was employed, I was getting lots of, you know, great experience, but I still want to go back and finish my degree. But I just never ever had the opportunity. So here I am, you know, 4 years after having kind of quit on that. You know, I was still insane. Now I'm just going to go back and get like an English degree. I don't want to do computer science in college. Google's like a university in itself, honestly, working there. I've learned so much. But to answer your question, yeah, send them. Send it on. Definitely.
You said you're a tool.
I was just curious what percentage of Google is open source,
or
percentage would you like
to
be open source?
Personally speaking, I would like for it all to be, but, you know, obviously it's not realistic from a business perspective. As far as percentages, I don't know, it's a hard question to answer. I mean, as far as like lines of code, yeah, it's I couldn't even say. It's I do know that Chris DeBona is trying to get them to open source as much as they possibly can. And one of the things that he's really doing is streamlining the process to do so. You have to go through all these different kind of audits to make sure that, you know, what you're releasing is open source, really meant to, you know, that sort of thing. But it's an ongoing process. One of the cool things, and sort of on that same topic, was I mentioned all these research publications. So Google released a research publication on MapReduce, which is kind of parallel processing thing that we have. And then someone took the concept of that language and all the details of the paper and did sort of an open source clone or did something similar. I forget the name, it's funny, like Hadoop or something like that. So these sort of things happen. And that's sort of like open source by proxy. Right? So you don't open source the software itself, but you say how we did it. Same thing with Google File System. Google File System is a massively distributed storage system. And I believe somebody did something similar to that as well. That's kind of a cool side effect. If you can't open source the software itself, then at least explain as much as you can about it and somebody else will just clone it. to be honest, a lot of what we have will only run on our infrastructure. You know, nobody has the infrastructure really to kind of mimic our needs. That's why it's not like it's so custom.
I've got a couple of questions. Probably outside of your arena, but can you comment on Google's bid on the Spectrum and the also the Microsoft bid on Yahoo?
I wish I knew. I wish I knew. I don't. I mean, I follow it, but I guess it's one of those things that's so far outside of my sandbox, I don't have any real details on it.
There was no memo that came across from Google Corp about the Yahoo.
Probably laughing.
Bit.
Yeah, there was something from, I believe, our legal VP guy. It was sort of a statement about it. I forget exactly what it said, but it was funded. as far as the Spectrum bid, I don't know. I probably know as much as you all because I read Google industry weblogs. Right? And Google is pretty good about talking about things internally. It's a pretty open culture. They don't have a lot of information hiding. If you're an employee and you're full-time, you know, they do a pretty good job of keeping you up to speed on what's going on with different things. However, that's just one of those things that I think is just so, I don't know, there's more thought about it. Or I just didn't pay attention. A lot of times I don't find out until way after the fact. So like, you didn't know that? Somebody knew that. Some of my friends will tell me stuff I didn't know about Google.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what would you say employee satisfaction is for Google?
I didn't even talk about the perks, did I? Oh.
I guess that's a 10.
Yeah, I don't like... This is the third or fourth talk like this that I've done for Linux User Group. And one thing I purposely don't do is try and walk in and say, and give a laundry list of all the perks. Because you can go read the Fortune magazine and find out all that stuff too. And I just don't want to rehash it. Really what I'd like to do is to talk about why Google appeals to Linux User Group type people.
You don't want to gloat.
Yeah. Well, when I got hired by Google, I gloated all over the place from my old boss. I sent them a box of Google t-shirts. It was great. They can't wear t-shirts to work there. So. I sent like 40 Google t-shirts. Like a little note. So like, ah. But since you asked, so it's the greatest food I've ever had. I get 3 meals a day now. Gourmet chefs. They had, massage, and I bring my dog to work every day. My dog plays with the guy's dog who sits next to me, and they just roll around all day long and bite each other. And at lunch, we'll take the dogs off their leash, and we'll be a pack of like 6 or 7 dogs running around the office, biting each other. It's like, the wild frontier of dogs. Great. But to answer your question, it's a wonderful company to work for. So that shows it in the media that they get, but it really is. They do a good job of taking care of people, and they don't kind of sell them.
One of the perks that I read about I thought really neat is the 20% personal projects. What's your 20% project?
I don't have one, but I should. That's on my agenda to actually select one. I'm one of those workaholics that what I'm actually working on is what I want to be working on, so I work on it all the time. And it doesn't even really cross my mind on a regular basis to go find something else. But I probably should just for
free, but you get paid for it.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, this is something that I wrestle with myself. You know, I have the greatest job in the whole world, you know, for me, and I put all my energy into it, and even if I'm not doing it for money, I'd be doing it anyway, you know, don't tell them. But, you know, so I end up spending all my time. So I have to, like, purposely make myself take vacation and do something that's not Google stuff.
There was a recent article in Business Week, a cover article in Business Week on a guy at Google that for his 20% project to create a huge new business with IBM. It's just a fascinating story. Anybody who wants to read it, go to the library and get that.
Remember what the business was?
Business Week from less than a month ago.
And what the actual project was?
Something to do with cloud computing. Yeah. He was from the University of Washington, 27 years old.
It's a cool thing, the 20% time, because it kind of gives you this outlet for these new, almost like startup type ideas.
Yeah, and that's exactly what.
Yeah.
His turn is.
And that's the intention, right? So we want to capture this great, you know, kind of this free form random ideas and let people run with them. So that happens a lot. Yeah. Did you have your hand up earlier?
I did. Okay. First of all, it's really fascinating to hear a Google employee's perspective of working for Google. However, I'm kind of curious.
Okay.
You described two personalities, one that's very open and very philanthropic, and one that's NSA-like. How hard is it to balance those two as we watch you dance between?
Very perceptive of you. So to be very honest, that's really the only thing that I don't like about Google. And it's one of those things that's just necessary. And I think that they are, so I joke and say that there's like a list of good the secret of the NSA, but in reality, they do open a lot of things that they don't have to. Mm-hmm. And now there's the issue of data centers and not being able to say, you know, Linux distribution and all that sort of thing. And at some point, there's just a business decision on what they're going to release and what they're not. And you know, I'm comfortable with that. There was a time, you know, when I was like, information wants to be free, and you know, it's, you know, everybody should know everything. And I don't know, maybe I'm old and jaded now, but I realize that there's a business need to really kind of play your card close to your vest as far as strategic advantage and competitive advantage.
Well, since Google knows more about me than anybody else in the world, I'm glad they're secretive, right?
Right. Well, so that's a very good point. So part of that is trust, trust of the users. You know, knowing that Google is not going to be very free with your search queries, for example, that sort of thing. I know it's not exactly the same thing, but there is a lot of concern over, you know, trust, data, confidentiality, that sort of thing. And there's also the aspect of having to keep certain things secret for a competitive advantage. So, I mean, in the long run, it's a good thing, because if it's a good business model to not divulge some of that stuff, and it ends up in the form of, you know, $20 million for grants for third world countries, then I think that's a net positive. You know, and that's, and it pays for my 3 meals a day. That's cool. I can live with it.
Since you danced around this idea of what you can and what you can't cover, do they provide you with some sort of like document that says these are the following items you can and cannot talk about? I mean, it's just. It seems kind of strange. I mean, I can't talk about that. I can't tell you that it's very well scripted.
There was such a document, I couldn't tell you about it. there is guidelines for what you can say and what you can't. And it's, I remember when I first started, I talked like this, you know, 20 years ago. This was about 2 years ago. When I first started, I really didn't know what I could and could not talk about. And it took me probably this long to be comfortable speaking in front of a room like this, not deathly afraid that I would give away some piece of intellectual or, you know, business secret. Right? But it just takes a little bit of time to kind of know what's proprietary, what's not, and be very comfortable with the difference. But I mean, there is guidelines for, you know, what you can talk about, what you cannot. So it's part of the.
You mentioned 20% time. question came up. And you have subordinates. What are their 20% top projects?
For the most part, my group doesn't do that. It's, you know, it's not necessarily mandated that they don't. But my group in particular, which I can talk very much about, they're so passionate about the projects that they are on. They're kind of the same way as I am. They're working 100% and then some on what they're working on, because it's just I had the luxury of having people that are working on what they want to be working on, and they for the most part dedicate themselves fully to that. Now, I also should point out that you know, I have a team of Linux system administrators, and I work in operations, and there is a little bit of a difference between what my guys work on and what the engineers, proper software engineers, work on. Like, they're not doing those sorts of ops. They typically really do their 20% time, no matter what. And my guys fit up so much. They just kind of work a little bit and run with it.
I have this vision of people that work at Google that kind of getting an avalanche of information dumped on them every day. With all of these neat high pressure people that you're working with. Now, first of all, is that true? And if it is, how do you manage that?
It is true, but it ends up being a good thing. It's one of those. So I talked about working in a small company, and I like being the big fish in a small pond. And you know, after a few years, I realized I'm not learning anything here. And going to Google was breaking free of that. So every day I go to work, and literally I learn something new by the time I walk out of the door. And just walking around, I learn something new. Hallway conversations. You know, everyone there is smarter than I am. But, you know, literally, I think. So I have no choice but to learn new things. And I really mean that about it. It's like a little university. I've learned so much while working there. As far as managing the flow of information, or the amount of information, I have very specific things that I'm focused on as a team, and I have very clear objectives for what I need to accomplish as a team, and everything else is just sort of learning for pleasure. So I take it as it comes, and if there's some new project that looks really cool, I have the ability to go learn all about it, or talk to the engineers that work on it, and find all the documentation on it, and rework everything. So it's, you kind of just pick and choose, honestly. I mean, you could learn anything about anything, and there's a lot of it. And I forgot what the headcount was in the last quarterly earnings report, but there's a lot of very talented engineers working there, and they're working on lots of different things. So you have the ability to go learn it all or none of it. It's sort of up to you.
Does Google have a specific need for programmers who speak Chinese or any other foreign languages?
Yes.
Anyone in particular?
Google has a very large push to be a global and a local company at the same time. So, one of the cool things that they do is they don't always hire people and ship them back to Mountain View. For example, if they find a group of talented engineers in, you know, Greenville, South Carolina, they will hire them on the spot and create an engineering office. And they do the same thing for countries abroad. There's internationalization, I think, is a big thing at Google. And they don't want to be a search engine with a big American slant on. They want to provide meaningful results in local languages that jive with that culture. They do a lot to really hire local engineers where they are and get their feedback and make sure that things are very internationalized.
So one language is not necessarily any stronger than another?
Not necessarily. I mean, to my knowledge.
Mandarin Chinese. I say Mandarin Chinese,
Jim?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Quite speak
Mandarin Chinese. My wife is Chinese. She's a programmer. She hasn't been in China right now, otherwise she would be here with me. So I'm asking questions for her.
Yes, they hire engineers from all over the world. I have this cool t-shirt that has a little, it's like a Google Maps thing, and it has a little flag with Google Maps with every engineering office in the whole world. It's cool. Everywhere.
I noticed you said you couldn't tell us what you really did on to in the long term, but can you tell us the underlying technology using IPMI, SNMP, something? Can you tell us at what level you're monitoring? Are you monitoring every single fan and hard drive spindle, or are you just monitoring the machine itself?
I can't find that, but I think it's silly. It just kills me. Right? I want to. But I can't. Even if you're
beautiful. I'm just kidding, YouTube. The one that stuck out.
Actually, I had it written down. I didn't say it. I don't know if there's one that they use for everything, but I want to say it was the Apache license. Yeah.
Yep. MySQL for the Apache license. I don't know if that's standard for anything. It might be, but I know that's the one that's just one example. I don't know. There's a lot more that I do. Don't know than what I do. Sir.
You can do within the data center for corporate America as well? Perhaps posting the entire data?
Not directly. So, one way that they might do that by proxy is through Google Apps. There's been a lot of movement on that product lately.
Did they not sell appliances to do that before?
I hope so.
They
have a search appliance.
I haven't seen it. They got that lately, though. Is that still out there?
It is. And if I'm interpreting your question correctly, you're asking if they will have an appliance that will do Google Apps type things.
No, an appliance that will actually employ the Google search technology within the enterprise.
That's essentially what Google search appliance does for
you. You know, what you can do with just the desktop search actually surpasses some of the specs that I see on some of those appliances. So I don't, a couple hundred gigs of data is just no trouble at all.
Yeah.
I don't care what they say. I mean, that's more than they claim, but it's easy.
I think the big, and I work very far from that department, but I think the big selling point for the search appliance is that it's one central repository where you can point it at all your company documentation, and it'll just go across on a regular basis and provide meaningful search results.
If you want me to answer questions about it later, I'll be happy to.
Yeah, you could probably answer more than I could.
Yeah.
I've seen them. I've touched them. They're cool.
I have a small business and the desktop search does that.
But that's interesting to hear that the desktop search does just as good. I mean, that's great. Right? Yeah. But to answer your question about actually hosting corporate America, I think by proxy, that's sort of what Google Apps is doing. That's one of my favorite products that Google does.
So they're going to like an ERP environment, hosting the supply line management,
and so those sorts of things are absent now. I don't know if they're working towards that. And it's not a secret thing, I just don't know. The only reason I know some of that stuff is because I follow it on Instagram, like we're talking about.
After years and years of wrestling with spam assassin, I don't know why anybody does their own email.
For real. I mean, so the Google Apps and you put your domain on Google Apps, I love that product. Yeah. So before I went to Google, I did consulting, like small office consulting. And essentially what I did was taking a bunch of open source tools and doing email hosting and calendaring and trying to roll all these apps into one thing for small business who couldn't afford large scale IT stuff. And really that's what Google Apps does, but they do it for huge enterprise, on down to small business, which is my favorite part. So now you can have a restaurant and have email and calendaring and everything for all your employees, and it's free, essentially.
Since you're in the trenches, so to speak, does Google have any sort of contingency plan in case our Congress critters go for a tiered internet?
Good question.
What's the question?
It's not about net neutrality, essentially.
Does Google have a sort of contingency in case our Congress critters allow?
He's thinking about all that dark fiber out there that Google has been rumored to have bought all the time.
In case AT&T comes to Google and says, hey, if you want to have Google load at the fastest quality to all of our customers, clearly you need to pay us some money.
Yeah, speaking on a personal perspective, and some of my coworkers, I think we all recognize that as a very bad thing. As far as the company stance on it, I couldn't tell you. I imagine that they would concur. As far as the contingency plan, I don't know. What are they going to do?
I think that Google has, I think Google has the ear of Congress. And it seems like Ben Cerf went to talk to Congress even at some point about that very topic, but I can't remember.
If Google were, if someone were to Google Yahoo, how many people would all, every person in Google know about that? That someone searched for Yahoo on Google?
Yes, I actually answer some of the search queries myself. It's a slow day.
On a related note, do you have like the billboard, like they have in Mountain View, where it shows the most recent searches, and is that filtered?
Yes and yes. Yeah, and so, you know, we have, it's actually a serious question. Yeah, so, I mean, we have analytics about volume, where searches are coming from, as far as the personalization of different searches. It's all very sanitized. You know, we don't want to end up in the position where, you know, we know who's searching for what. And that's something that they kind of take very seriously.
Oh, so you could know, but you don't go, you know, searching through, like, ah, someone searched for Yahoo.
We get along with Yahoo. We play paintball stuff with them.
Who wins?
Google District, we like to use the CASA for our search engine. And we have a lot of webpages. And everybody's asking me, what's the upgrade? It says upgrade, and I go to that, and I don't get it. So, is it something we pay for, or?
I don't know.
It says upgrade.
Is
once
it,
you go into Picasso,
it seems like they
upgrade, but there's nothing there.
It seems like they release something where you could pay something for a lot more storage.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
But I don't know if it's an upgrade for your storage or an upgrade for the application itself.
Storage or application, since it's not really taken.
I use Picasso a bit, and not expensive. I use Picasso Web a lot. I think it's kind of a cool product.
When will you have a good Picasso Linux farm?
Is it not good now?
Wine.
It's essentially running on wine.
Yeah. Not native.
What is?
Picasso.
Picasso?
Yeah.
Same with
the Picasso.
I don't know, soon. Real soon now. That's my question when people ask me for, you know, product deadlines and stuff. Feature requests.
I wonder if Mark would say Q4.
Yeah. What's this Q4?
You never tell them what's weird.
Right.
Can you,
sir?
Is George Long here already?
No.
How do you pass the Google exam?
The interview?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Can you say this?
Study. This is what I did. So I mean, you know, it's a good question, and it's one that I can answer, you know, to some extent. What I did was I tried to be as tricky as I could, and I went and I found all those research papers, and I printed them out, and I told you I'm low tech, right? You know, the paper, right? I printed them all out in a big binder, and I just attacked it with a highlighter, and I studied everything that I could. And I yeah. The ones that stuck out in my mind were, you know, Google File System, and not that I would need to know that for my job, but I thought it would be cool to kind of learn how the company works, right? So part of my philosophy is, if you go to apply for a job, you should at least do some due diligence and figure out how they work, right? And if nothing else, it makes for an interesting interview. That's like, well, I read the paper in GFS, and I thought this could be done better, and it's like, who's this guy I think he is? But at least he's interesting, right? You know? So, I mean, I to seriously answer your question, I did a lot of that kind of stuff. I knew generally what I needed to be good at. I knew I needed to know Linux. I knew I needed to know TCP/IP. I went back and studied all my, you know, all my old Cisco books. Not that we use Cisco, not that we don't. But
they're all open source.
Yeah. I mean, I just cramped, to be honest. And I prepared for anything and everything, and that was really my process, and I drank a lot of coffee.
Since Gmail storage keeps going up, if you multiply that by all the Gmail accounts, does that mean you have somebody on your team who does nothing but add hard drives on the network all day, every day, 7 days a week?
How do you know we don't have a whole team of people doing that?
Is that a yes?
Probably. But yeah, I mean, service demand is expanding.
Can you tell us the...
What we're going.
Can you tell us the dollar amount or amount about calls that has to be
I have not to say all. My principles.
I could offer
teach you how to Google bomb.
What else?
How much corporate email do you get every day?
Oh, a lot. So I just wrote, we kind of have an internal one blog thing, but I just wrote my own personal Ken's tips and tricks for dealing with email with Google, because we just get horrendous amounts. We have a list for everything, and I get, you know, tons of things CC to me and sent to me, and
yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Okay. Well, I can definitely speak to that. So I'm a big fan. I don't want to sound like all corporate trendy, but I'm a big fan of this getting things done.
Yeah.
Love that. I've read that book probably 5 times over, listened to the audio thing, and it took me like 5 good tries to really do it well. But
he's spoken Google several times also.
Yeah, they not David Allen himself, but one of those other guys.
No, David Allen.
David Allen, but I've heard it.
Oh yeah, well, I'm saying, he goes to Mountain View a lot, but some of his other guys came to where I am with him, and I was able to participate in the course. And that was after I read it and started doing it for a while. But I love that stuff. And I kind of have my own ninja kung fu getting things done method for Gmail and labels, and I have a little stuff label, and I have special rules for handling email flow, and I'm the one person, I never miss anything I need to act on, I got it, and I'm just a master. Nothing slips through the net. People ask, it was like a 12th person who asked me how I did it, and I finally wrote a big, long, obnoxious kind of weblog thing.
You don't use a third party app?
That was part of my little write-up was I hate those because they get in the way.
Is that public?
They do.
When you run, is that public when you run a blog entry?
Yeah, I sanitized it and copied it to my public web blog.
And would you provide that address?
blog.eater.org. Eater is my secret hacker alias.
E-A-T-E-R?
Yes.
What's your last name, Ken?
Weird. Is that U-P-H-R? Now you know as much about me as I know about you.
Does Google give you flex hours so you don't have to go rush hour in Atlanta?
Yeah, I work 11-7.
Nice.
I got a 20-minute commute in Atlanta.
I'm a big tech football fan, so I know how it gets in Atlanta just from a tech football game, much less morning.
It gets horrendous. I miss traffic completely. It's awesome.
Are you in South Carolina or Georgia?
Atlanta.
Okay.
Me personally?
Is anybody in South Carolina right now?
There's no. They're doing testing at the facility and stuff, so there are some people there already. Excuse me. Any more?
I noticed that when I Googled your name that you had a big hand in chaos.
Yeah.
And would you like to offer any wisdom or suggestions for growing that huge group?
Interesting question. So. But one thing that we really did that was very fruitful was the community wireless conference, which I don't know if it's out of vogue now, free wireless, but that was a real fun direction that we went in. So we had the Linux users group, and y'all probably wrestle with this, but I mean, you know, on a good night, we'd have maybe 20 people. And we had a lot of people that are interested, read the mailing list, and a lot of people that were kind of indirectly involved. But as far as, you know, good meeting turnout, now, meaning like this size would have been very unusual for us.
Just but people for us as well.
Okay, yeah. So, but we did have, you know, maybe 100 people that were more or less at least keeping an eye on it. So one thing that we did was we got involved with setting up free wireless in the downtown. I just think it was a big downtown area here. There's a lot of trouble in downtown.
It's free wireless downtown here. Yeah.
Is it, it's really free? Like somebody set it up as a community project? Or is it provided by the city?
The city pays
okay.
for it.
Well, if y'all are out of luck, municipality should do it.
It's a nice arrangement. If you work downtown, it has a pretty
nice job. Very far, though. It works on Main Street, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't expand.
That's all.
Way out of
the
way.
Plus the larger.
Yeah. And but really, that's all we intended to do was I just wanted free wireless while I was right here.
Does anybody know how scalable this Meraki stuff is? I've got.
I hadn't heard of it.
It's just a little mesh network wireless devices.
Australia's doing some very good.
And I've got a couple of them and stuck them up, but I don't know how scalable it is. Individually and as a couple, they work just fine.
Well, so to the point, I mean, the wireless project was fun, but it was really, to answer your question, it was just sort of a way to bring people together and get them a focus project. Like this free laptop or a free piece of Linux PC. Awesome. We did that one Christmas. I was involved with the Technology Association. I just don't want to come around the back of the room. And I was chairman of the community outreach program. And I also had all these Linux geeks ready to do something Linuxy. And so kind of brought them together. And we got a whole bunch of computers from businesses that were upgrading or whatever. And we installed Linux on them and gave them the kind of four demos for Christmas. Things like, to me, that was so much more fruitful than trying to have a meeting that people were going to show up to. I mean, these meetings are great. I looked at some of your past ones, and they look awesome. I'm going to go back and listen to some of the audio from them. But it's so hard to get good speakers month after month after month after month. And if you don't do that, your attendance starts to drop off, or it's hit or miss, and you can never predict how many people are going to be there. But if you can find kind of a common project to work on, then that's a really great thing. As a side effect of that wireless thing, so we set up, we had kind of this big knock. It was in this dirty, like, second floor of a bookshop downtown, and had, mice and everything. And that's where we made that, like, our network operations center. And we got all these free computers. We're talking, like, they're kind of on caster wheels, P200s, and we just set them all up to do different things. We had, like, one DNS box and a couple of OpenBSD firewalls. It was just a place where people could go and kind of, play with different systems.
Is Google bombing or spam texting department scheme worse? Or
subjectively speaking, I think it's getting better. Because I remember a while ago, I got my own website to the top of the index pretty easily. And I haven't been able to do that personally. And I work for Google, so obviously that's a subjective answer. It seems to me like that's getting better. I mean, it's a concern, right? Because manipulating the index obviously has its problems.
What is Google bombing exactly?
What is it?
Yeah.
That's when you get a specific keyword and you kind of arbitrarily make it point to somebody's website and make fun of it. So I had this friend, and he's a security kind of amateur security researcher guy, and he would find exploits in different software. But we'd always make fun of them because they were just like local non-root exploits. So if you search for useless exploits, it would go right to his website, right? I thought it was hilarious. That's an example of Google bombing someone or something.
Right.
But it's a lot harder to do that nowadays. How they do it, I don't know. That's what the genius engineers do that work on the search index. Sorry.
Somewhere on the Google website, it said that they were working on getting Google Talk onto Linux. Have they already done that via the the Google Talk through the internet without having to download anything?
You're talking about the client that you download that interfaces with Talk?
Yeah,
you can use the Talk gadget.
The internet.
Well, there's Gmail and also the iGoogle thing, and I think you can even embed that somewhere else.
Anything that's Jennifer the client.
Yeah.
Is there not a G?
I don't know, to be honest, because I don't use it. So everything that I do as far as chat goes with Google is the embedded Gmail Flash widget. And that's what I use. So, I mean, it was the third or fourth time I've done this talk, and I get asked all kinds of questions about Google stuff that I have no idea. Just because, I don't know, I'm too busy, working on something else, and I never really paid attention to it. I wish I did. I feel like I have to represent all of Google. It's hard. It's a big place.
I haven't seen I haven't looked at your chirp straight on, but I see resistance as futile.
Yes.
Is that a good chirp?
No, but I thought it was cool to wear this time. It will be assimilated. Yeah, working for Google is like being assimilated, but it's not in a bad way. It's cool.
It's not having implants.
No one stabbed you in the neck, I swear. did I answer your question about kind of the positive ways of directing groups? And I don't know if my group was a wild success or not, but in my experience, it was really great to have some kind of project like what you folks are working on to bring people together to work on stuff. I love that. Who else?
It's so hard to get a realistic market share analysis for Linux, but I think if anybody would be able to provide that kind of number, somebody like Google, do you have a rough estimate of the worldwide market share for Linux? Because I know people like IDC say, well, yeah, here's the market share. If you count people like Dell who are selling servers, we don't count anybody who downloads and installs it, and much less if they install multiple times.
I would think that the best way would be to look at browser strength.
Yeah. I don't know how many people are online. You've got 40% of Americans still don't even have internet.
Pretty good sample set, right? Yeah. So I that data available within Google, probably. I don't know. For all I know, they published it somewhere. I wouldn't be shocked.
Let's look in math and OS fingerprinting.
Yes, in math, the internet, find out.
Yeah. That's probably what Netfernet does.
Maybe that'll be my 20% project, and mapping the whole internet. Sorry, now we're
with clusters that Google has available, could you do that in just your 20% time a week?
Probably. It's part of Googlebot for a weekend, right? Anyone else?
What questions have you been asked the previous time that you felt were interesting that we haven't asked?
I got grilled in Des Moines. They asked me all kinds of stuff. Like, they break me up the coals on why SMTP sucks and why Google should be doing stuff to change it. Like, I don't know, I'm just an administrator, dude. Snap on. That's the one that sticks out of my mind.
One thing I wish Google would do again is Google was doing VPN for a while. And they dropped it.
What do you mean?
They were allowing you to have a VPN connection, say, a wireless hookup. Uh-huh. And it was acting for a while, and then it died.
Okay.
Little appliance you installed on your machine. And I assumed it had something to do with the fact that they were rolling out wireless in places at the time. And about the time that died, the little VPN.
I don't think I've heard of that. It tickles something in the back of my brain.
A little secure VPN software download. You could
do.
That was, I think it was a pilot thing they had going because they were rolling out. Like, have you ever been to the home office, whatever? I think they got everybody in that whole area has free wireless or something.
All of Mountain View right now. There's something on the table to do all of San Francisco, but I'm not sure if that actually happened or not.
That was a part of that because they were trying to.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
How do we get everybody secure? VPN, and we've got to open it up. You know, that's everybody's wireless data can be rolling out there. So I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I ran it for a while. Thought it was pretty neat, but I quit.
Yeah, the wireless in San Francisco, they're looking at doing a mesh topology where they have a company. They're looking at using a mesh topology. Essentially, everybody gets a little big device and they just kind of plug
that's
it
what Meraki is.
Well, that's what Meraki does.
Yeah. They came out of an RIT project called RootNet. Most of the guys that work Meraki were with RootNet. And it's a mesh network. I did a little bit of research on that because we're talking about going through FLPC, so these neighborhoods that can't afford broadband. I talked about it later. But supposedly, you have one T1 sort of entire neighborhood. I think it'll serve 10 Meraki devices.
See, that's what we're trying to build in Columbus, was that sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, we just used WRT54Gs and we tried a number of different experiments.
WRT or something and tried to create a little mesh. It doesn't do mesh very well in the box, though, I'm thinking. But that's what this Meraki thing does pretty well.
The Meraki's real seamless. I mean, you know, for a small number, do you have any deployed?
No. I was trying. David's the wireless genius. If you want to ask questions, if you want to get with me, I've got a project that people are ready to, they want to set up. So, they can probably pay a little money for the devices to be able to we'll talk about it if you want to help out. How about it?
Cool.
Well, you guys,
guys don't want to wait another decade for WiMAX to finally be available?
Yeah.
We're hoping Google will help out with that. 700 megahertz.
It's funny you said that. I mean, so we're doing that wireless thing in Columbus, and you know, we're trying to get the city to sponsor it and that sort of thing. And everybody's like, I don't know, WiMAX is going to be here next year. I'm like, no, it's not. You know, even if it was, it'll take 5 years for everybody to get a card. Yeah. And here we are, 5 years later, and still not really even available. So,
you know, another thing about the electricity side of things, if we're talking about deploying some sort of mesh topology in a neighborhood, low-income area, is that something that Google, is that something along their lines that they're interested in that kind of activity?
I think that the only tangible example of that right now is that OLPC right there. So Google's been, I'm not sure how involved Google has been, at least funding or grants or something. You know, buy one, get one type stuff. But you know, that essentially really does what we're talking about here, is the meshing at the client level.
Yes.
So I think that's kind of a cool thing. As far as, you know, more grandiose things on that, I'll just get started.
And since we're on the subject of wireless, are you familiar with the fact that South Carolina is trying to promote a, somebody help me out here, but it's
high speed?
Yeah, it's a WiMAX network, basically. It's called UBS. Yeah. Stands for educational broadband system.
Extremely advanced.
Yeah, well, depends on what side of the coin you're on, but basically they've got airwaves that are getting freed up from the 2009 switch over to digital, and FCC has to have a plan in place.
So many user times, you lose it.
User or lose it, basically, and so they're trying to build a consortium, public private, to get this to happen. Basically, if it were to go through, they'd have a statewide WiMAX network. So,
interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I don't have Google, you know.
My only worry about that is presumably it would be run by the state.
They're trying to get private enterprise.
They are.
To take it over, what they're pushing for, so on.
That's always the danger of, you know, municipal type things like that. It's great, it's free, but it's also run by the government. Yeah. It's free, but it doesn't work. No offense to government employees here. It's not your fault. It's not all your fault. But no, I have not heard of that. That's kind of cool.
I'm just going to continue this just for a minute because I was down toward your way last week at a technology roundtable discussion in Santee, and there's a big problem, actually. A lot of these rural areas in South Carolina, they don't really have broadband. It's kind of a chicken and egg question because there's not really any infrastructure there. So if you're a broadband provider, you're saying, I'm not doing that because there's nobody out there really using computers, you know, and everybody outside of Greenville, see Greenville, says, hey, you guys got everything, we got nothing. So it's kind of a problem where these areas don't have, you know, sufficient infrastructure. So, and I can ask you about this later, but in terms of like 20% projects and stuff down in your area, that don't have. Are you going to be in South Carolina? Are you going to be in that?
At least once in a while.
Okay. But I know for a fact there's a bunch of areas out there that have very little infrastructure. They're probably looking for, like, you know, some geeks that will come and help them. So I'm actually trying to get FOPC started kind of down that area. I've got, I can talk to you more about it later, but I've got some people out there who are looking for some basic Linux skills and kind of, you know, get community center started with Linux and WiMAX. So,
yeah, definitely.
But the problem is, yeah, so it's all chicken and egg. They don't have anybody who knows it enough. It's not enough infrastructure.
We've been talking about this, you know, in the industry for years.
Right.
You know, how do we deliver, you know, service to these sorts of areas? And it's really kind of shocking to see that no one's come up with a great solution.
Well, the 700 megahertz is the problem.
Right.
If you look at from the side of the communities, they're all waiting for somebody to do something. And then broadband side of it is all waiting for somebody to do something. It's like, well, you're not really ready for us to do that.
Yeah.
How are we going to get ready if you don't, you know? So it's kind of this whole.
It does provide a neat opportunity for kind of community organizations to go out and just do it ad hoc.
There's some great little entrepreneurial efforts that people have done in remote areas like that. That, you know, I keep running across write-ups on them. A lot of them once they've done the groundwork, then somebody comes in and sort of takes it over and they have broadband, which is maybe all they wanted in the first place.
What now?
There are a lot of efforts around where people are using, you know, just regular Wi-Fi, but with directional beam antennas and that sort of thing, to service pretty large areas.
And
there's a lot of that has happened, and even telephone networks and so on that people have put in. A lot of times, once they've sort of done the spade work, then some commercial outfit will come in and sort of take it over, or actually do their own thing, which is okay too.
Sometimes it's on folks like us to do proof of concept for it. Mm-hmm. That's fine. If it accomplishes the end goal, so be it. Right? That's what we wanted to do kind of in Columbus. The city didn't want to do it, then we were just going to do it with tin cans.
We can take you
15 minutes down the road here to somewhere like Interreague, where like the phone lines were probably laid in person by Alexander Graham Bell and Shell.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. What else, folks? Sir?
Are you trying to do anything to use less conventional means of getting energy, like fossil fuels? Like you have like solar panels all over your buildings or whatever?
Yes. We produce 1.6 megawatts for the Mountain View campus. Renewable energy is kind of a big thing with Google, especially the founders, Larry and Sergey. Really into solar, really into the plug-in hybrids, that sort of thing. If I had it my way, we'd build fusion reactors everywhere. I don't know how many people saw the Sardar talk.
Fusion reactors?
Well, there was a talk by Dr. Lissard, who died very recently. And he had an interesting talk at Google, actually, about he's been working on fusion energy, worked with the Department of Energy for a number of decades. And he had these great proof of concept reactors, and he said that his research supports the position that really right now it's an engineering problem. He's got the physics proven, and he needed X number of million dollars to go for the next proof of concept. And nobody in the private sector picked him up, but he maybe did. So it's once again everything old is new again, right? So it's just like ARPANET. The military is going to fund cheap free energy. Right. So, $200 million fusion reactor was this guy's thing, and he died. But he has a group of physicists that work on this thing.
Actually, those little sand bed reactors seem to be pretty easy to put together and easy to get online and extremely safe and sort of start them up and walk away from them and never go back and look at them. They're still not going to melt down,
When it comes to renewable energy, I think that's
nuclear's the way.
Now, speaking on behalf of Ken and not Google, I think that's a really interesting direction of research. If I were a science fiction writer, I would write books about fusion power getting everywhere. Bassard was the physicist who coined the Bassard ramjet, which actually figured into a lot of science fiction. So he came up with this idea of the space ramjet that would collect hydrogen and create a fusion reaction and power spacecraft. And it was actually fairly feasible. Very interesting man to listen to. It's a shame he died, but one of those people that believes so passionately in his work and can take very complex physics theory and describe it in a way that's exciting for people that don't know anything about physics. We lost a very little him.
Just solar, are there geothermal wind?
As far as Google's efforts?
Yeah.
So, there was a recent announcement about, it's a funky acronym, it's like Renewable Energy Less Than Coal Project. And I think the purpose of it is to direct more money and research in all directions for finding things that are cheaper than coal. The one tangible project I recall is the plug-in hybrid project that they donated a lot of money to. And I know the founders are very interested in solar power, as evidenced by the solar panel on every single building in Mount Peter. So there's a lot of interest in that direction.
But they just have solar, additionally have
The solar right now. I don't know what they're investigating exactly. But I think part of this new project is sort of to explore more things like that. There for that.
Google start making into energy production for all the data centers.
Wouldn't it be cool?
Is it Google Power? Big Power, all yeah,
Google Energy Incorporated, right?
Just Mountain View, or does some of the data centers also have solar power?
Just Mountain View. Yeah, well, now I can't speak for data centers specifically.
Is that a I can't speak or?
I'm not supposed to talk about data centers, Brad.
Have you ever been on the party jet?
No, I would. By me. I gotta take Coach. Company name. What else?
Which bar do you want David to take you to?
I love when you guys ask that. My third talk to the lug, and they always end up with, what bar do you want to go to?
Yes.
I don't know. You tell me.
John's the connoisseur.
All right, it was a pleasure talking to you folks. You'll ask a lot of questions.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.